My Voice Podcast. We show entertainment stuff. Billy and Seth, David and Billy, and David and Seth, and Billy again. This is the best show in the entire world. Movies, TV, video games. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to your weekly White Noise. I'm David Hunter, and I'll be hosting this week just to keep you on your toes. With me
and
to
I'm
bring
Billy
you this...
I'm Seth Juniak.
Y'all screwed up my intro, damn it.
I'm just saying that you missed some perfect comedy gold opportunity by saying you were Billy.
No, I have something else after that.
I have a cold, which makes my voice sound... I actually had my balls dropped finally, so I have a manly or deep voice. Let's hear your intro, David.
It's not that funny, I guess. Is that what y'all built it up? Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to your weekly White Noise. I'm David Hunter, and I'll be hosting this week.
I'll start.
Are you trolling me?
Welcome to the NFL Greatland Podcast. I'm a writer, blah, blah. Joining me as always, blah, blah.
Welcome to CNN Tonight. I'm Tom Brokaw, and with me as always is Saddam Hussein, and...
well then.
Saddam's dead. That's not funny.
All right, just keep going on the intro. I want to hear it.
Today, topics fun of bunch. A about talk to action. In back, B, too excited I'm and exaggerated greatly been have demise my of.
No, seriously, I want to hear your real material, though. I mean, this is great stuff, but like, what was it? What was your intro?
Hello, I'm not going to say it anymore.
No, you got David. David, listen, do this. Don't do this for us. Do this for the audience. I won't say anything.
No promises, but go ahead.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to your weekly White Noise. I'm David Hunter, and I'll be hosting this week just to keep you on your toes. With me to bring you this week's roundup of all things television, film, and geek culture are Nicolas Cage's stunt double, Billy White, and former Filipino immigrant turned champion boxer, Seth Juniak. So, guys, I'm afraid to tell you that reports of my demise have been greatly exaggerated, and I'm excited to be back in action to talk about a bunch of fun topics today. How are you guys doing?
So you're saying you ran out of Halo games to, you know, to try to, like, reenact.
Yeah, I mean...
Why am I Manny Pacquiao?
Because, Seth, you just really kind of remind me of him. I mean, you got the great...
I like to think of myself as, like, a Floyd Mayweather.
Right? You're still about the money, right?
Yeah, I'm all about the money. And, you know, I'm just really good at hitting stuff, and it translates... My career translates into my personal life very well.
Yes, you are an evangelical Christian also, as we use this platform to preach to our audience, which is very...
Yeah, and I may or may not have hung out with Tebow once.
Yeah, maybe you did, maybe you didn't. You are a notorious Gator fan, but yeah, guys, we got a lot of stuff to do today. We were going to talk
a little bit. Can I be Drake? I want to be Drake.
Yes, sure.
That's the most controversial thing that's been said here, is that you want to be Drake, a.k.a. the fan of every single sports team.
You try making 7 beats in one summer.
but Coach Calipari definitely has endorsed you as a great fan of his team, so you got that for you.
Yeah, just like, so, who wouldn't want me to show up at their football practice? Let's be real.
So I'm excited that we actually got the full gang back this week. You know, we've had a lot of, I guess, some rough times here in the White Noise family, and I just, you know, I'm glad everyone's back. This will be a fun show, I think, and I just have a great quote from Friday Night Lights that I just really want to say, because I've been watching Friday Night Lights again, and our Hall of Fame, which me and Seth put in, but, you know, every man at some point in his life is going to lose a battle. He's going to fight, and he's going to lose. But what makes him a man is, at the midst of that battle, he does not lose himself.
I like it. Did Kyle Chandler say that?
Clear eyes, full heart.
Full heart. Can't lose.
Is that Kyle Chandler?
That is Kyle Chandler. Emmy nominee for Bloodlines, Kyle Chandler.
He might be the greatest.
And probably one of the biggest reasons John Hamm doesn't have an Emmy.
No, he is, because the Suitcase, that was the year that the Suitcase was John Hamm's, like, Emmy episode, which people consider his best Emmy showcase episode. But he lost to Kyle Chandler because Coach Taylor was the best, and I'm actually really happy Coach Taylor got an Emmy for that.
Yeah, I wonder
and
if
granted, maybe he's more unhappy with, you know, Bryan Cranston for basically being the best, but... But you know, that's unimportant.
That's all right. I'm sure he's going to get his eventually. He'll probably become a great movie star. I mean, he has the looks and he has the demeanor. I mean, we'll see what happens with old John Hamm.
I don't know. This might be the year he wins, if he does win. But, you know, Bob Odenkirk might have something to say about that.
Yeah.
By the way, so my first, like, intake of Bob Odenkirk in my life was he was, like, a dumb little side character in How I Met Your Mother. And every other time I've seen Bob Odenkirk was some dumb side character and anything else until Breaking Bad, which he was still kind of a funny side character, right? So imagine that Bob Odenkirk is nominated for Best Actor alongside guys like Jeff Daniels and John Hamm and Kevin Spacey is still one of the weirdest things I cannot grasp my head around.
Just some dramatic powerhouses there, and for Bob Odenkirk to kind of find his way into that group, into that sort of presence is very impressive. But, I mean, I think that as True Detective's kind of started wrapping up, we're all probably in agreement at this point that Better Call Saul is still our premier television program of the year.
Wait, hold on. You mean you aren't on board with this season, David?
I am on board with this season, but I just am not hating on it as much as you guys are.
It's funny because, like, you're the biggest True Detective defender, right? And we haven't actually – we've been kind of generous, all things considered, compared to a lot of the internet hate. But it's interesting because you've missed out on our last two discussions about True Detective, which we've had a lot of great points. I think last week really ties into this week's episode really well. We might as well just transition, but – I think one thing you mentioned last week, Seth, was essentially how so much of the season was about parenting, right? And I think that's kind of further seen so much within this episode.
Well, you know, parentage and responsibility, whatever you want to call it. Just, you know, there was a real exploration of the theme. And you were starting to see that thesis, you know, finally being established. Granted, we're 5 episodes in. We're more than halfway through. This is far too late for things to finally start getting going.
And even then, it's like, we're talking about storylines, right, that are starting to, like, get at the forefront, and it's like, okay, so do we even have time for this? Like, is it really, it's kind of hard to have, I guess, a lot of emotional resonance with some of these storylines. It's a real shame, because I think this has been the strongest episode in terms of a pure character-to-character moment, which we kind of figured we'd get after that shootout, and this is, like, what, 2 months later, I think?
It took the shootout, I guess, to really kind of push them into a new direction and kind of get the case really going. But, you know, as you mentioned, it really is far too late for a single season television program to really get started halfway through the show when you only have 4 more episodes left.
Yeah, and even then, you know...
3.
I mean, even then, though, we're starting to see kind of some strength. I mean, I thought the Woodrow stuff was just... stupid. I don't even know if there's a better word for it. Like, the scene with his mom was just, like, so emotionally apathetic that I was just like, I don't know. The show...
It's kind of funny. If you ignore his mom, it's great stuff, though. Like, Paul Woodrow's stuff's been weirdly the most irrelevant, but I feel like best character material stuff if you ignore his mom.
Yeah, and God, I will say, before we start lambasting it for all the badness and, you know, deservedly so... I will say, though, that Colin Farrell continues to perform above his pay grade with this. It's just some excellent physical acting and just really good, you know, just line deliveries. Like the when basically he found out that, like, the whole basis of his, you know, his character and whole basis of his
was a lie.
His whole trip down Vice Lane was all a lie, you know, and that's what, you know, that was the cliffhanger, obviously. So that's good to see that that's going to be an inciting incident. But even then, I still feel, when I look at all the events that have happened throughout this season, I feel like we could have squeezed it into maybe 3 episodes. And I feel like I would have loved so much more of this show if all of the stuff that we've gotten so far was just, you know, condensed into 3 episodes, because now that we're 5 episodes in, I just don't know, you know, there's another one, like the diamonds come into the picture, there's another lead that we're exploring, and it's just kind of like, well, you have about 5 other leads that you haven't even explored yet. I don't know. I for a show that's called True Detective, there's not a whole lot of detectiving going on.
I'm the world's greatest detective.
That reminds me of the greatest YouTube, like, series, essentially. You had the College Humor Batman ones. I love those. I love those so much.
All right. Look at me now. What am I? Harvey face. Now what am I? Scary face.
Scary face. But, yeah, I mean, I see your complaints. I guess I just have not really felt the same about the show. I mean, I've enjoyed a lot of these secondary plots that have gone
on. You haven't felt the need for stuff to actually happen.
I've been enjoying the character development. I found the characters very interesting. I mean, the only one that I have not necessarily bought into out of the main cast is Vince Vaughn's character, you know, Frank Simeon. But I've enjoyed I enjoyed him in this episode. I thought he was probably his best episode yet. The acting he did with Kelly Riley, you know, when he finally accepts the situation and gains love for his wife, even though she comes out and admits that it was not actually his impotence that couldn't bring a child. She actually physically cannot have a child. I mean, there's a lot of just interesting things going on with that theme. And I thought
agree.
He did a good job.
I love Simeon's stuff this week, but again, it took 5 episodes.
No, it has taken too long, and I'm not going to defend that element of it, but it has not really made me hate the show to the degree that everyone else seems to be hating. I still enjoyed it. I still enjoy the writing style. I still enjoy the characters. I enjoy the tone. I enjoy the atmosphere. I do agree that it is kind of humorous to see all these scene transitions of highways happen for no particular reason. That's something that becomes borderline self-satire of the series, I would say.
Well, I don't even think that to call it self-satire is to say that there's, you know, motive behind it. And I don't know.
No, I mean, it's not. There's no motive. It's just it's funny. It's funny to see that because that's something that
although
I guess all of these directors feel like that was an important part of what Fukunaga did, where he had those scene transitions of the landscapes of Louisiana. But all of those had meaning and impact and reason behind their existence. Here, it's more like we're just transitioning scenes. So here's a highway to look at for, you know, 15 seconds.
One thing I will say
is that our city skyline.
I want to see the meme that comes out of you know, Velcoro beating up Rick Springfield to the tune of Jesse's Girl.
I did
because that's the guy, right? I mean, that's Rick Springfield.
Yeah.
So yeah, which is pretty comical. Which I want to say though, I'm with you, Seth, entirely. You're even pretty, I guess, even in terms of our opinions on the show. But it sucks that we're at 5 episodes in and we're now starting to get development. I feel like this is a show that's main flaw is there's too many characters and not enough time. And then also the time we spent with these characters was too long in development because he couldn't just develop the characters. And like I said, Paul Woodrow Tokich, I think he's had some phenomenal scenes here and there. I just don't understand what the point of him is. But at least
he's my favorite
there's
character
some,
now, actually.
Well, he's like the best storyline that doesn't matter at all to a certain degree. But I will say, Colin Farrell, when he found out that he essentially had murdered the wrong man, that was his best acting I've seen in the season so far.
Yeah. The watching his face contort at the information was just like, I thought it was crazy. You know what I mean? I'm just like, wow, that's the one time that I've kind of been like, you know, a little stricken. But the rest of it, I mean, I stand by, you know, on one hand, you know, I don't like the writing style. I think that, you know, Nick Pizzolatto is one of the most unfunny guys there is. And usually when you have that kind of highbrow writing, you know, you need to throw me a humorous quip every now and then. And, you know, Nick Pizzolatto's idea of a humorous quip is like, what's the line that Bez Reedy said, you know, I'll take a long and arduous moral inventory or something like that. And it's just like, that's a lot of big words, but I mean, it's not funny. I mean, I don't know.
I'm not lying. I'm feeling pretty apoplectic right now with you.
That's the same thing, though.
You actually didn't even hear his rant on that word, too, which is pretty funny to me to think about. I mean, like, it's pretty funny news. Like, you have, like, Annie, we haven't really, I guess, talked about her too much, but Rachel McAdams is still way too talented, in my opinion, for the character she's in. And, yeah, it was kind of interesting to see how she's kind of, like, a humbled character, and she has some interesting scenes. But, once again, there's kind of a certain, like, what's the point exactly of her here? What's the point of the show? And what works is the character developments in some of these moments that you see. Like I said, I'm more interested in Paul Woodrow than Simeon or Annie to a huge degree. Simeon's actually interesting because you're right. Like, that was probably some of the best stuff that, you know, Vince Vaughn had all season. And a lot of it wasn't, you know, him in doubt, which he doesn't seem to play as well, as much as him in, you know, lovingly acceptance, you know.
Well, even the scene where he goes to, I think that's, like, what, an old employer? You know, when he kind of dangles that little worm in front of him and Frank's, like, just jumping at the bit, you could see kind of, you know, in his acting and especially how restrained it was in comparison to some of the other stuff. I wholeheartedly agree that Vince Vaughn has the acting chops to pull this off, but I don't think the acting's a problem.
I mean, I think that a lot of our criticisms for his performance are actually rooted in what the character is supposed to be. I think he's supposed to be this guy who's feeling that awkward situation. He's a guy, you know, he mentions he was a poor thug growing up, poor thug without any wealth, being a poor, you know, and then rising up and trying to become that kind of rich, educated, you know, guy who uses very big words, very big, you know, rich vocabulary. And he just seems awkward doing it. And I think that is actually a root of his character and a really important part of it. Is him struggling to find his place with his character and who he is. It's these people. I mean, the episode's name is Other Lives, and it's people living you know, living these false realities. I mean, you know, Colin Farrell living, like you said, a lie, you know, thinking that he murdered the rapist and he seeks vengeance, and he actually hasn't. He's been used by Vince Vaughn. Vince Vaughn, you know, wanting to be that, he wanted to, you know, return and being an actual kind of political power and being that, you know, rich elitist type. And he's actually kind of reverted back to being who he is, and finally he accepts his situation, and, you know, it's interesting he finally reaches that comfort level. I think that Taylor Kitsch's character, you know, Woodrow, is kind of in an interesting situation too, with his, you know, closet homosexuality, but he's maybe kind of, he's, you know, wants to have a family, and him struggling with his childhood with his mother. That's interesting. I mean, there's a lot of, I think that's a big theme of this season also, is the whole idea of living these false realities and trying to find out who you really are.
And never doing anything out of hunger, not even eating.
See, these lines that we criticize, I don't know, I guess I just don't necessarily hate them as much. I don't know.
I think to a certain degree, maybe you're right, in fact, that, like, we're criticizing a character that's not because of the acting as much as just the character itself. I don't know. But it does seem like there's a huge misstep, especially the fact that Simeon really isn't related to the other characters at all, except through Colin Farrell's character in Belcoro, but even then, only loosely. And right now, we finally ended episode 5, we finally got the big thing that might connect the two characters.
Yeah, and the one thing, too, is that I'm not sure how much, you know, this is one of the things when we talked about Game of Thrones, I used to throw a bone towards Game of Thrones because of, you know, the production schedule and just the ambition and what it takes to pull it off. In one hand, you know, where I can kind of say that's a credit to Game of Thrones, True Detective had itself a pretty good crunch to pull this off. As soon as the first season was over, they were back in production making this season 2. I've said this for a couple weeks that, you know, we're starting to see the effect of, you know, maybe this script didn't get looked over more than it needed to, you know. There wasn't an extra scanning of the material, and you know, they didn't hold out for a director to do all 8 episodes. They found one instantly. And that's something, too, is that even if the episodes themselves were, a little better, I'd prefer if, you know, too, there was an overarching vision. And, you know, it's very clear to see that we've seen 3 different directors' vision so far. And I think that's one of the contributing factors as to why it's been kind of hectic so far.
No, I mean, I kind of think that's spot on, actually. I mean, Billy and I actually talked about this off the air about how it really would have benefited Pizzolatto to have an extra year. This isn't the kind of show that you can rush out once every year. It's an entirely new story, entirely new ideas, and new places, new scenery, new characters, and it's tough to do something to repeat what you did last time with, you know, Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson and that excellent story, and to create something that matches that within the span of just 1 year. And really less of that, because there's a lot of post-production involved, a lot of, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And you're right, signs are kind of showing.
Yeah,
it's like he had this awesome idea for season 1, right, which is, you know, an in-depth character study. You could argue that Russ Cole was really this one character specifically he had a huge vision for, right? The first season was highly successful. So they're like, okay, we need another season because you were really successful in the first season. Like, okay, you know, I had a great first season. I can do this, obviously. You know, I'm great. But, okay, well, here's an idea, and this is an idea, and an idea. And then he had all these ideas, but he didn't exactly know what to do with it. And by the time that he really started figuring out what to do with some of these characters, he was already out of time. He had to rush in the paper. So, yeah, this could have been a very fascinating season of television. It could have been a lot better than what we've seen, but he ran out of time.
Yeah, no, the themes are worth exploring. I agree wholeheartedly, Billy.
And there were some great moments, though. You had the shootout last episode. You had the dream sequence, which I enjoyed because it was kind of a David Lynch adage. And you had, of course, like you mentioned, Velcoro finding out about the lie that he was living. There's been some great moments here, but it's just few and far between in terms of the disjointed narrative that we've had, but I think we've all kind of spent enough time on this. Seth, you recently just got back from seeing Ant-Man. Why don't we tell you a little bit of summer movie catch-up here?
Oh, yeah. Ant-Man was all right. It's kind of easy to tell that this is the end of Phase 2. This is something that the Hollywood Perspectives podcast kind of dubbed it. It feels like a palate cleanser, in a sense. It wasn't Guardians of the Galaxy. It was trying to replicate that with the same model. This is something that was a little unexpected, but all in all, I walked away, you know, that was a good movie, and, you know, and sometimes that's all you need, is just walk out going, that was a pretty good movie. I'm glad I spent the money on it.
Is there a single studio that's become better at making, you know, consistently good movies? Good movies that might not be great and aren't really complex, but just entertainment, than Marvel at the moment?
Not I don't think so, but, you know, I mean, let's face it, since Iron Man, there's been maybe two bad Marvel movies, depending on your thoughts on Thor.
And they've still been at least marginally entertaining.
Thor is, can we just say Thor is half good and half bad because the stuff in, you know, in Thor's homeland, that stuff's awesome, and then everything on Earth's bad?
I mean, to me, there's really only two turds that Marvel has made, and that's Iron Man 2 and Captain America the First Avenger.
I don't even think that one was bad. It was.
I don't think that was bad either.
It was an origin story, and maybe you're, you know, maybe we're just exhausted by origin stories. But that one in a vacuum, it wasn't terrible. It's just kind of hard to think about how good it was when Winter Soldier might have been, you know, 10 times better.
Yeah.
What's just really interesting to me about some of these movies is, and I've kind of gotten to the point where it's like I feel like they peaked pretty early on to a certain degree of, you know, the first Avengers and Iron Man. And yet, even though some of these more, you know, later movies have been more interesting, and you actually think about, like, what are the best villains so far, right, of the series? And you could argue, you know, they're pretty much like Loki, you know, the Winter Soldier, Ultron. These are the guys coming in the last couple of movies. So it's weird how they're really excelling in some areas, and they're doing a great job from a pure entertainment standpoint, but it does seem like we're getting less than we were originally getting in terms of what the peak of these movies are.
Yeah, but I agree. And Thanos is some guy that, you know, as soon as we start seeing the layers with him, that might become some really interesting stuff. But back to Ant-Man really quick. I guess I can do a de facto review of it. Paul Rudd's all right. I mean, he's all right. The supporting cast around him is, you know, basically props him up where it's hard for him to fail. There's a couple weird tone moments. Like, there's a scene where there's, like, a really maudlin scene. Like, you know, a very emotional scene. And then, you know, Paul Rudd says something, you know, kind of like, oh, that's awesome. Oh, did I ruin it? And it's, you know, it's kind of a line that could be a commentary and could be, you know, it could be a jab, kind of some little self-awareness, but in the movie it kind of functions as something that's just kind of, you know, and that did ruin the tone a little bit. But other than that, you know, it's a movie that, you know, got better as it went on. I felt the stakes kept going on and on and on. And also, Peter Russo's in it from House of Cards, and he was obviously the best part of season one. So
absolutely was. In fact, I'm still very upset. Like, I'm not gonna lie, my love of season one of House of Cards ended the second they kind of, like, screwed him over and killed him off, because I still don't like the way they did it. Whether it's good television or not, I'm still upset about that, because Russo was so great.
Yeah. After watching that, he became my choice for who I wanted to play Lex Luthor eventually. Was Corey Stoll. I felt like he would make an excellent Lex Luthor.
Oh gosh, so. speaking of that, the Dawn of Justice trailer was one of the trailers before. God, I am just, that movie's going to be a hot mess.
going
to be god.
But it's going to have a lot of great actors in it though, and that's cool, right? Cuz you know, all these movies have a bunch of great actors that don't necessarily seem cast correctly. They always work out. Like that Valentine's movie. Remember Valentine's Day, guys?
I mean, there's going to be so many great actors in that movie. Like Zack Snyder's son, who's playing Robin.
It looks like a hot... It looks terrible. Jesse Eisenberg isn't bald, for one, which is something that I think is kind of a betrayal of the character.
But he's a younger version.
Ben Affleck just doesn't look like he can handle Batman.
By the way, I have a quick tangent I want to say on Valentine's Day I just remembered. So that movie was so bad. I went with this girl for Valentine's Day. That movie was so bad, we immediately just ended things after the movie without really saying anything.
Like that it ruined your relationship, the movie?
Yeah, it wasn't like that long to begin with. It was like, you know, okay, this might be going somewhere. We saw the movie, like,
nope.
Okay, we're done, yeah.
I hate you. Why'd you take me to this?
Anyways, yeah, no, the movie looks like it's going to be terrible. But you know what? It'll be fun if we go into that, the mindset of the movie, thinking it'll be bad, then it might be ironically fun.
I think the tagline for Batman versus Superman should be, this is Batman versus Superman. It's not Valentine's Day, at least.
No, I think we could go into Batman the same way we went into Jurassic World. And frankly, Jurassic World is one of the most fun I've had watching a movie just because of how many... Oh god, that's so wrong movies.
One of my favorite movie experiences still when you and me saw Imitation Game, because it was like this movie that was like trying so hard to bring these like real emotional moments that were just hilarious.
Yeah, like the scene where he's running, it's like, oh gosh, you know, you can't help but think of the Tom Cruise running from his gay thoughts, and then we find out Turing's gay, which, you know, it makes sense now. So apparently running is Hollywood's version of, hey, let's make this character gay.
I was thinking more of like the, you know, like the like.
Oh
the,
yeah, why do bullies yeah. bully?
Well, yeah. Or the worst one was like, you know, I forgot her name already. Yeah, Karen Knightley. Karen Knightley's character. She's like the way the people would treat her just so she could have like clever comebacks. You know, like, ah, oh, you're a woman.
Yeah.
Well, like, blah blah blah. Great quickie stip.
You're right. They were right. You're a monster. Slap storm off.
That was bad. Why is that movie nominated for Best Picture?
Well, because...
Had a great score.
Theory of Everything was nominated, which is why I'm not too concerned that, you know, Gyllenhaal might get his, because even if Southpaw is horrible, Theory of Everything was nominated, so...
Yeah, anyways. Yeah.
Which he's apparently been excellent. He's been excellent, even though the movie's been, you know, not very well received, but his performance has not been the weak point, so I'll probably go see
Actually,
it.
Actually, so speaking of Tarantino, so Alan Turing was the star of the movie. I think this is kind of a fascinating question for you guys. So I read this somewhere on Reddit recently, and it was like, you know what the Turing test is, right?
Yeah, it's, is something human or not?
Yeah, essentially, it's trying to see if a computer can have the behavior of a human being or not, right?
Sure.
So what if an android, right, an android or artificial intelligence, AI makes more sense, right? What if an AI was that smart, right, that it purposely failed that test to not reveal what it was capable of? Isn't that kind of terrifying to think of?
Yes.
That's deep, man.
That is scary. That's what Ultron should have done.
But as I was saying, though, Dawn of Justice looks terrible because that was one of the previews. The two previews it was sandwiched in between were Star Wars, which is going to be phenomenal, and Fantastic Four, which looks like it's going to be great, too.
Yeah, definitely excited
about
that
again?
One.
I think that's August 7th.
So when you're looking forward to movies coming out later this summer, you got Fantastic Four, as you mentioned, which is one that I'm still excited about. And then I think Mission Impossible Rogue Nation looks like the one that I'm going to really enjoy also during this summer. Because those movies, just like the Marvel movies.
Because Tom Cruise does his own stunt.
Yeah.
He was literally
exactly.
on that plane.
And Spectre will be good. I still want to get out and watch Trainwreck just because, you know, I like
I've heard that's very good.
I'm sure Southpaw is, like, very Hollywood-y, and, like, you know exactly what's going to happen, and yet I still want to see it, even with the bad reviews.
Well, from one franchise, from Marvel, which has always been consistently making good films and, you know, solid, at least entertaining movies, to a franchise that's just turned into absolute terrible schlock and just embarrassing territory. Terminator Genisys, guys.
So, you know what's my least favorite thing about that movie that I have not seen? In the trailers, they gave away their big plot twist, and I'm now convinced that if a trailer tells me everything about the movie must be terrible because they had to put that much in the trailer just to try to get people to go to it.
I know the director of the film, Alan Taylor, was actually extremely adamant about them not revealing the twist, because that was something that was supposed to, like you said, be the big twist that kind of surprised everybody and turned the movie on its head. And, of course, the marketing department and the producers got involved and said they had to reveal that so they could hook people and make them want to go see this movie. But really, why would anyone really expect this movie to be good? I mean, Terminator Salvation, terrible reviews, a lot of not very good reception, and I thought that was actually my third favorite Terminator movie. It wasn't the worst one I'd seen yet.
You know what's funny to me? I saw that movie, and you know, Christian Bale, Sam Worthington were in it. I can't tell you what exactly happened in that movie, thinking back about that movie.
Yeah, the only thing I can remember is, if we do not get across, we are dead! We are all dead! Just Christian Bale yelling, "We are dead!"
I don't know. Of the three of us, which one spent money on Genisys?
Me.
Well, I still want to see. I'm going to go probably see Ant-Man this weekend, if only because Paul Rudd from 40-Year-Old Virgin is still like one of my favorites of any character in anything. So for that reason alone, I really wish Ant-Man had some thing where like he just talks about the crazy things his ex-girlfriend did. And he's like, "Well, that's just love, man. That's just love."
But no, really, it was very good. I mean, it was very... It wasn't great. I think a lot of people are unfairly comparing it to, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, that other off-color, you know, not big-time Marvel property. And, you know, it's they kind of were expecting it to be a Guardians of the Galaxy. And it's been, you know, what is it? I think projection said $50 million. It's made about $45 million. So, I mean, it's still making the money Marvel wants for it, but... You know, I don't know. It was good. I recommend it. Just, you know, drop a matinee on it.
And what's interesting is the next movie we get in the first movie of Phase 3 is probably the one in a lot of ways I'm really not that excited for, and I don't like the idea of the plot of Civil War. So Ant-Man's going to be all we got for
it. Why don't you like Civil War? I think that sounds like a fascinating plot line.
oh, the two different, you know, rival sides. You have like the Captain America side, the Tony Stark, and we're gonna.
Are we sure that that's what's gonna happen?
But you got Martin. Yeah, you got Martin Freeman. He's gonna play the.
Yeah,
bad guy.
Because I know the. I know. Okay, it was pretty much.
I mean, I know the comic story just as well as you do, but I'm just like, have they? Civil War, I thought, was a Captain America storyline, not an Avengers.
It's Captain America storyline, but it's pretty much, it's a combination of two things. It's the Captain America versus kind of Iron Man, the way they should be treated.
It's basically going to be another Avengers in terms of the cast that they have.
Yeah, it's what the world unsure about what to do with, like, these superheroes and stuff, whatever, which is kind of incredible.
Oh, so like the Incredibles.
Yeah, Incredibles, yeah. Which, Incredibles, arguably the best Pixar movie, really. It's an amazing movie.
Yeah.
See, I'm excited about Civil War.
Depending on your thoughts on WALL-E, but, you know, my vote goes for Incredibles.
It's Incredibles. I mean, you know, it's artistic. Well, it's artistic, sure. It's fun. It's happy. Well, but, like, is there a super suit? Does it talk about how kids are stupid?
Is Samuel L. Jackson in it?
That's why I'm surprised Thor is still alive. He has a stupid cape. I mean, that's why Iron Man's so cool. He doesn't have a cape.
Well, I mean, so we're definitely in
it. I will say this about Ant-Man. There was a line in it where, you know, basically Michael Douglas, who's like Hank Pym, he's the old doctor, and, you know, Paul Rudd's like the protege. Basically, you know, Michael Douglas is like explaining it to him, and you know, Paul Rudd's first question is, "Did you call the Avengers?"
That's pretty funny.
And, you know, yeah, so it was kind of
that's a little meta there. I like that.
I get it because they're both Marvel super. Oh, Ant-Man.
Go fuck yourself, Billy.
imagine if they had called in Daredevil. I'm sure that would have been an interesting crossover since. That would finally settle the question of whether Daredevil's actually in the universe with all these other Marvel characters.
Yes.
Do you think
I just answered it. We're done now.
But yes, Ant-Man, thumbs up from Seth.
Yeah, thumbs.
And
from Billy? Yeah, from
thumbs
Billy,
up.
Yeah,
one and a half thumbs up, at least. Not two thumbs up.
Thumbs up, and, you know, I'm kind of yawning and not paying that much attention, but yet, you know.
Terminator Genesis, sue the company that made this. Take all the film copies and burn them, and then send the ashes to the moon. Turd, do not see it. But this is a good...
Why did you see it? I don't really want to understand the question. Why did you watch that movie?
I don't know. I was bored, man, and I wanted to go see a movie. I wanted to eat some popcorn and check it out so I could talk about it on the show.
When you go to the movies, like, what do you guys buy? To me, I have to have a soda and a bag of popcorn every single time I see a movie. I just can't not go to movie theater and not have the popcorn and soda.
I know, I'm frugal. I usually don't get anything.
Wow, you're cool.
Well, it's also because, like...
Bring your own soda, like, in your pocket or something, then, or,
no,
you know,
like,
whatever.
I don't even like soda because, you know, I've got a very weak bladder. So, if I drink a soda, I'm going to miss part of it.
I bring my filet mignon with some lobster and a bottle of wine.
Because you're a...
Yeah, I'm classy. I go to films. I don't go to movies. Like Terminator
Why didn't
Genesis.
You watch Ted 2 or Max? Did you guys see the trailer for Max? I mean, yeah.
That's the prequel to Mad Max, right?
I mean, they both had a dog at some point,
yeah.
So...
But yeah, segueing from this Marvel discussion, we got George R. R. Martin making some interesting comments about Marvel, actually. Saying that some interesting thoughts on the villains. He's tired, apparently, of the villains in Marvel movies, like, basically being a foil and having the same powers as the heroes.
That's
what do you
the
think
whole purpose
that make you?
I don't know,
with George? Do you disagree with George?
I don't really know what his gripe is.
Well, what happened was he had these awesome ideas that it's too late to put into the movies now. Kind of like, you know, Game of Thrones because he took so long writing.
I don't know. I'm just trying to think, like, you know, having a villain that, you know, what is it? Let's say guy one is like, you know, he's like the superhero. He's this fire related guy, and, you know, it's kind of like. Then you bring in this villain who is his superpower is, I don't know, he's really good at working metal. And it's like, you know, the fire guy is like, oh, well, maybe he could heat him. I don't even know what I'm getting on. It doesn't make a lot of narrative sense to have something that's completely unrelated. I mean, back in terms of, like, drama and narrative, I mean, you have to have the villain be a foil in some respects. Because
I mean, when I see, like, the old ones that I really liked, like Spider-Man 1 and 2, they're not exactly, you know, they're not like just, you know, foils of each other and have the same powers. I mean, you got Doc Ock, who's he has interesting fight scenes with Spider-Man because he has a different type of combat style and a different assortment of powers. You got the Green Goblin, who's kind of the same way. But then you look at, you know, Venom, maybe not like that. He's basically just a different version of Spider-Man. But here's George R. R. Martin's, you know, real quote here. I'm tired of this Marvel movie trope where the bad guy has the same powers as a hero. The Hulk fought the Abomination, who's just a bad Hulk. Spider-Man fights Venom, who is just a bad Spider-Man. Iron Man fights Ironmonger, who is a bad Iron Man. I want more films where the hero and the villain have wildly different powers. That makes the action much more interesting. And I think I agree with that. I think that'd be interesting to see a movie that does it that way.
I'm just not offended by it, you know? I mean, it's the kind of thing that, you know, even like Green Lantern, Green Lantern's best villain.
Hey, how dare
Sinestro.
You mention Green Lantern?
No, I'm just trying to. I'm thinking comic books. Okay, calm your tits really quick. Like Sinestro is his big villain, and you know, like, and what is Sinestro? He's just basically the same. You know, and even Batman. I mean, the Joker. I mean, he's not.
The Joker is. I don't really think there's much connection between the Joker and Batman, except the fact that the Joker wants to be.
But
Joker
there's not a
disconnect,
you know. I mean, that's.
Well, yeah, but it's like he's not like it's not like Dueling Dragons or something. The ride from Universal Studios.
Yeah, it's not like some Charizard Blastoise type thing. I mean, I don't know.
By the way, I don't know if either of you guys have played a Pokemon X or Y, but they have like these megas, and my Mega Charizard or whatever had Solar Beam. So
you're asking if I've played a Pokemon game?
Of course you have, obviously. The point is, my Mega Charizard had Solar Beam, and he had this ability that made it always sunny, so I was shooting out one turn Solar Beam, which means my Charizard could not only destroy Venusaur, but also owned every Blastoise I ran into.
You're a badass, Billy. You're the best Pokemon trainer of all time.
Thank you. I tried very hard.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I see the point, but even then, I'm just like, eh.
It's not that important.
it really isn't, and we spent 5 minutes on it.
Well, let's just, real quick, though, let's just for fun, like a fun little exercise, right? I think I said it earlier, the best villains to a certain degree have been, like, Loki, Ultron, the Winter Soldier, and I don't really see any of them as the exact same powers as their
Joker.
Well,
the Joker is kind of the guy who doesn't have any superpowers except for his, cunning intellect and his schemes.
His madness. What?
I mean, he's no Arnold Schwarzenegger, villain wise in a Batman movie.
No.
So my Hearthstone deck or whatever, I made a Hearthstone deck. It's basically the freeze mage, where the goal of it is to, kill people with the face, but live as long as I can with, ice barrier, ice block. I named the deck the Ice Age, and there's like exclamation points and E's and like it's pretty fantastic. I'm not gonna lie.
No, that's a good one. Definitely a good joke.
What's the dinosaur? The Ice Age. Best
so,
five
guys,
seconds of any movie ever.
So guys, we got the most important news of the day. Space Jam 2 with LeBron. Do you want it? So apparently LeBron James's media company signed a deal with Warner Brothers for producing future films and stuff. And rumor out there is that LeBron is going to bring back Space Jam. Which I don't know if y'all watched Space Jam when you were kids.
Of course. Are you saying that we're not 90s kids?
I was saying
about
that sarcastically. It's like, actually, I absolutely.
I own the DVD. I own the DVD, the VHS, and a digital version.
So just like a little tribute here, what is it that made Space Jam so special to you as a kid?
Because you had this like magic drink that we now know to be steroids that makes you really good at sports because you believe or have steroids.
Yes.
Isn't that really the plot of Space Jam? Everyone takes steroids.
I never looked at Space Jam that way. You just ruined my childhood.
Okay. All right. The reason I wanted to talk about this was that hashtag Space Jam 2 plots was trending on Twitter. And
oh,
some
really?
Of them were kind of ridiculous. One of them was...
Some of them? Not all of them?
All of them were pretty ridiculous. I'm trying to find them really quick on Twitter, but they were pretty great. All right, here we go. There's a Sports Illustrated article. Okay, so Jeremy Wu, LeBron arrives in Looney Tune Land to save Bill Murray from decades of intergalactic cartoon gambling debt. Okay, here's one. LeBron is too good, so Sam Hinkie takes over the Monstars and tanks for draft picks. Hashtag trust the process.
Those are great.
Okay, here we go. Luke Ridenour is repeatedly traded back and forth between the Toon Squad and the Monstars. DeAndre Jordan signs with the Toon Squad, changes his mind, and heads back to the Monstars, and then back to the Toon Squad again.
These are all great sports jokes.
What I find interesting about Space Jam is they touched on the fact that he's a baseball player, but they never did go into his gambling debt aspect of it, why he was out of basketball.
Jeez. Oh, here's the best one. The Monstars take Tim Duncan's talent, who's still reliable for a 17-9 night.
Yep, pretty much. Will Tim Duncan ever be bad at basketball?
I don't think so.
So if you're going to remake, if you're going to make a new Space Jam, I mean, LeBron James, obviously, since he signed, would end up being, you know, the Michael Jordan sort of role. Who would become the Monstars? Which basketball players would you have playing the Monstars?
Danny DeVito.
I think we got to have a...
Like, if you were to choose the basketball players that are on that team.
Sure. Well, we got to have Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
Absolutely, Russell Westbrook.
We got to have Steph Curry, who, you know, shoots planets into other galaxies.
The
like,
only correct answer is...
Because that's
Cousins.
A realistic representation of his range.
Boogie Cousins is the only correct answer.
Yeah, we need Boogie Cousins.
What about Carmelo Anthony?
I think Mark Cuban's the coach.
Look, I'm just saying my favorite thing was the fact that Danny DeVito was like the main antagonist, you know, of the last one. And if he's not in this next movie, I'm going to be very sad.
Adrian Wojnarowski scoops mid-game that Bugs Bunny has a torn ACL.
Yeah, I mean, I actually don't even know how to pronounce his name, so that was pretty impressive.
Wojnarowski?
Yeah, Wojnarowski, whatever.
Charles Barkley would have to return in a cameo, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. He's the man.
But no, I'd watch it. I think LeBron's likable.
Yeah.
Know?
Apparently he's very good in training.
Did you guys see the LeBrons like a long time ago? Like he had like the LeBrons. It was like these like clips for Nike. And one of my favorites was like, train the pool. You think Michael Jordan trained the pool? He ain't trained the pool. And then like also he's like, stop looking at my lemonade. And then like just like the cool LeBron is like, you know, diving in, you know, like really this dramatic dive and spool. Did anyone else see these commercials?
I've seen the what should I do one.
No, go look at the LeBrons on YouTube right now, or I guess after the show, I guess we can wait, but still, they are...
Well, okay, guys,
if you saw those, you would believe that...
Quick intermission as we go listen to Billy's orders right now. I'm sorry, I can't hear you. I'm watching these things that I have to watch right now.
Yeah, unfortunately, I let you host this week, David, because I enjoy being the dictator who dictates things.
The Billy-tator, But yeah, transitioning from, you know, Space Jam, which has a basketball twist, we're going to go to one of, you know, media's biggest basketball fans out there, who's got a new gig, and one of our favorites on the show, Bill Simmons, going to HBO for his own sports show, and having other media ventures in there as well, apparently.
I have to give you all the credit in the world, so I am probably the biggest Bill Simmons fan I could possibly know, which everyone who's a Bill Simmons fan probably thinks that way. But he was kind of like he's the reason I even got involved with, you know, media. So not just sports writing, but media in general. He's the reason I'm talking right now, I think, to a certain degree. And when I had an interview for Chicago Law, they asked what one person would I want to have like lunch with or whatever, and I was like, Bill Simmons, and I explained it. And that's probably why I didn't get into Chicago Law. But I think there's a correlation.
Well,
there.
He's a Celtics fan, you know, they're Bulls fans.
It's true.
Absolutely, yeah. So, but anyways, David did say that Bill Simmons, he thought, would end up with HBO. And at the time, I was like, what? Nah, I can't see that. He's, you know, he's not going to have enough stuff he can do. There's not an online component. But, nope, he's HBO. And we've kind of known this for a little while that was, like, the most likely destination.
It's official.
Yeah, I think at the time, I was a little, I could see it, but I think this or that is a better fit. I thought David originally said Netflix.
I said both. I said HBO.
Oh, well, then that doesn't count. You can't claim that you 100% predict.
But no, because I will defend him. He said HBO first, right?
Okay.
And we were all suggesting multiple ideas, but he did say HBO first.
All right, no, which, that's cool.
You know, John Oliver, I think if he has his successful debut as I think John Oliver's was, you know, and sort of like the way they want to do the show, then I'll be really excited because I think HBO is finally starting to get good in that, you know, regard. But at the same time, I really don't prefer him on a show like this. It's kind of like SVP and Priscilla, right? I much prefer SVP on his podcast, which I always have easy access to, compared to what he's going to be doing for ESPN. Even though if he has, you know, more freedom, he has very interesting ideas, I don't prefer him in that format. And that's what I'm worried about Bill Simmons here is I don't really particularly want him just in this show format. I like his other project more. I like even Grantland. He kind of created Grantland. He hired every person on Grantland himself.
Well, the good news is...
And I agree. And I think that the John Oliver model is one that makes it look especially, you know, especially, I don't want to say...
Attractive,
I guess. But, like, you know, it makes it believable, I guess, that this could work. And, you know, he'll still have, like, the video podcasts type stuff. He'll, you know, have that weekly show. And John Oliver, you know, his clips get a lot of traffic on YouTube. So it's the kind of thing that, you know, we kind of downplay just how much, you know, YouTube and, you know, all the stuff. We think that, oh, he's just going to have a show and that's where the buck stops. Well, that's not really true. you know, he'll still have the column, I think. He'll still have all this stuff. And really, you know, and also really quick, I want to shout out the way that he announced it. On Twitter, he sent out the 1983 HBO trailer. So kind of a cool thing like that, you know.
The reason they probably signed Bill Simmons is Bill Simmons already spends all of his time talking about HBO shows, yeah. Between Game of Thrones and my favorite Sopranos, and then, of course, The Wire, which he's the guy who decided the smackatology bracket, trying to figure out the best Wire character. So, I mean, this is a guy who already watches every HBO show, so they'd be like, okay, well, he'll give us more publicity for our other shows anyway, so that's even better than
It just makes sense. It seems like a good fit to me. I mean, this is a guy who has been dealing with problems with ESPN censoring him and, you know, having quarrels with them for years. And now he's really going to be set loose. And it sounds like HBO is going to give him a lot of freedom to pursue the things he wants to pursue. That could be I think that's a good thing. I mean, I could see maybe some drawbacks. Maybe he becomes less focused on some things and kind of goes into material that he doesn't necessarily know a ton about. Like, you know,
This will be his show.
I just Billy mentioned that whenever he does his Oscar show, for instance, on ESPN, that it's obvious he hasn't seen some of the movies.
My favorite line of the Grantland Oscar podcast back this year. I haven't seen Cake, but Jennifer Aniston got snubbed.
Actually, first he was like, Jennifer Aniston got snubbed. Just want to say that. Now I have to say that I did not see Cake. That's how he delivered it. We always watch lots of the same stuff, Seth. That's always kind of fun, that guy. But the thing is, like, I think this is his show, so I think he'll pretty much format on things that he knows more so. So I'm not as worried about that. Yeah. But it is, like, when you listen to talk about Game of Thrones, it's very obvious that he's a casual Game of Thrones, like, just watcher who he thinks it's fun, literally, for not knowing half the stuff that's going on, which some people do, you know?
I think it's digestible for a lot of that people in the audience, though.
Yeah.
People who are kind of similar and kind of just casual, they're interested in these things, but they're not going to obsess over them to the degree that, you know, we will. Bill Simmons, and he kind of makes things palatable for people.
I think his most marketable attribute is just how likable he is, though. Not necessarily the knowledge and ideas he has. It's just, you know, he's very likable, and he does have some good ideas. I think he's, depending on what day you ask me, he's, like, probably the single most basketball knowledgeable guy, like, in the business.
And it's kind of interesting, because I think, like, his influence to me has always been in two big things, right, like what you've seen. But one is kind of as creator and innovator in the genre. Like, he is the first sports blogger to really be successful. Period. Like, he was the rise of ESPN to a certain degree because he had this very popular blog on AOL that ended up getting sent out on email, so they picked him up, and he really, you know, kind of brought ESPN to the forefront from a pure media blog standpoint. He was one of the very first ones, but also the fact that he's always been great at creating things, which we saw with Grantland, but also the 30 for 30 series was Bill Simmons' idea. That was actually one of his big success for ESPN, and I think part of HBO's idea is Bill Simmons will be here to help create documentaries for, you know, hopefully like 7 Days in Hell, which is hilarious, but, you know, help make documentaries for HBO.
HBO used to be kind of the premier sports documentary network, and when, you know, Simmons became ESPN, like you said, he kind of turned it around and kind of stole that thunder from them and kind of became, you know, made 30 for 30, like you said. And, I'm excited to see what he's going to do.
Yeah, he's a very, very, very profitable property. And ESPN's going to regret letting him go, and HBO, they won the sweepstakes.
Well, he said bad things about the NFL, so, you know.
And speaking of that, when you're seeing these other sports networks, you know, pop up, like Fox Sports 1, for instance, bringing over Colin Cowherd, another big personality. Scott Van Pelt going to the late-night segment and going away from that kind of, you know, where he was in his prime, I felt like, in the podcast business and also on SVB and Brasillo. I really enjoyed him in that aspect, and I think that him maybe going to the late-night might take away from that. Is ESPN lacking on some of these big personalities, and is that going to hurt them in the long run? Like with HBO getting Bill Simmons.
Well, for every Bill Simmons that they got rid of, they keep a Scott Van Pelt, they keep a Ryan Russillo, they keep a Reese Davis. I mean, they've got properties. I mean, it's I don't know. I think we're overstating it a little bit. ESPN just has to make those knowledgeable business decisions. It's like the Lions. The Detroit Lions had to let Ndamukong Suh walk because the price tag was too high. In that same token, I mean, Bill Simmons is just, you know, how much do you really want to keep this guy?
It's just interesting to me because I feel like Bill Simmons and Colin Cowherd, I mean, were probably the two most recognizable voices on ESPN in terms of, like, the big opinionated guys. I thought of maybe Skip Bayless, which not many people like him, but...
I think
to a certain degree, like, there's a certain nature of these big personalities that ESPN is kind of cutting down on, which isn't necessarily the worst thing, but it is some of the most markable people they have.
Yeah. They are still keeping some of their good guys, mind you, but it's just hard to stomach, you know. I personally don't like Cowherd. I don't think he's the same kind of talent. If I'm ESPN, I probably let him walk too. But, you know, he's good at what he does. And, you know, maybe ESPN will regret it down the road. But
anyways, I feel like, you know, we've talked a lot about this subject, about a lot of subjects today. And it's good to have you guys back and for me to be a part of the show again.
Good to have us back.
Okay. Yeah, the people who've been doing the show while you were gone. Yeah. Mm-hmm. thank you for welcoming me back here, David. I've been gone for weeks, you know, working on my Halo reenactments, and you know.
Yeah, good to have y'all back in my life. Not necessarily, you know, back on the show. It feels like, you know, y'all have been gone for a long time. You know, we don't really get to talk as much.
Tell us about your summer vacation, David.
Well, I had some long walks on the beach. I drank some pina coladas. I got in a warthog race.
Like
got in a warthog race, but yeah, you know.
So really quick, I'm going to mention this because it is kind of news. The International for Dota 2 starts about this week, so I'll be
way to be selective and not mention Evo, which just happened.
Yeah, well, who cares?
And also, you know, just to close on a note, we did find, apparently NASA discovered a planet a lot like Earth. It has like the same distance from the sun, and a sun that's similar to ours, and it's just slightly bigger than the Earth, so some
call
exciting
it
stuff.
Earth 2.0.
No, it's a bunch of series of letters.
No, we call it India.
India.
I'm just saying, I think it's very likely that, like, 300 years from now, they'll write stories about what life used to be like on Earth 1, and that's superior Earth, which they'll probably run through resources faster than we will.
Are you going to be a woman?
Mars.
I'm just thinking about Marvel and the whole Earth 2 saga thing. So is Billy going to actually be named Seth in the other reality, and he's going to be a woman?
Well, the name Seth doesn't exist in the other reality. We actually, language doesn't exist. That communication is dealt with, you know, hand gestures and twitches.
Did you know one of the main differences apparently between animals and human beings is animals do not have quote unquote language from a pure technical term if you're like a speech pathologist or something. So it's very possible that a different civilization of human beings will not actually have language.
Anthropology from the white noise guys.
All right, on that note, we have run our course. We're babbling, and it's time to end this, guys.
All right, well, Ben, that's David Hunter. I'm Seth Juniak and Billy White, and that's also David Hunter.
I don't exist.
All right, see y'all next week, everyone.